And great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Great to have her along. Great to have you listening in. And I hope you'll join us with your own questions about your pet and your pet's health. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Dr. Sandy, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
It is nice to be here, Larry.
You know, in the past, we've sort of touched on from time to time some of the costs associated with owning a pet. And I think I like your suggestion that we should really go through that a little bit more completely about the expenses that we should expect to pay.
You know, and it's one of those things where it sometimes depends on the pet you get. The ASPCA has a wonderful chart that looks at dogs, small, medium, large, cats, even like down to fish and things like that, and breaks down what the cost is. And even something as simple as a fish has expense as well. But, you know, and I think that people are always surprised when all of a sudden, you know, yeah, I paid a lot of money for this dog, but now I have all these other expenses. And you know, trying to save for emergencies and things can really, you know, cut into the family budget, but it's things that you have to consider. And it's kind of all over the board, but as to what things cost. But there was just a study that was just done just recently, actually, because there's a lot of stuff online that's a good 10 years old. And what they found is that it was estimated to cost for a dog $2,858. And so, you know, that's a chunk of change. And what they're looking at
now
is...
Now, wait a minute. How much is that for a month or a year? I mean,
that's
a year?
For a year. Is for a year, okay?
$2,500, roughly.
Yeah, right, up to $3,000. And, you know, when you're looking at the cost of food, heartworm preventive care, like vaccines, visits, the odd emergency, grooming, doggy daycare, classes, the dog crate, how many callers you go through, things really start to add up. And I think that, you know, just sitting down and planning before you adopt a pet is a real eye opener. And I see so many people that have no idea what they're getting into, and they adopt a pet without doing any research on what their health care needs may be, or, you know, what it costs to board them. And you know, we don't do that if we're going to buy a car or a dishwasher. We spend a lot of time looking into things. But, you know, for something that's going to be with you for many, many years, have a look into it. And actually, the veterinary care end of things was the least expensive of all the stuff that was there, if your pet is healthy. And that's why good preventive care is so important. And, you know, but we were actually one of the lowest costs as veterinarians for pet ownership. So, yep.
But I got to tell you, even with a lot of careful care of your pet, expenses, medical expenses can...
And that's where looking into, you know, getting pet insurance and so on, I think is really important. And although it may look like a lot at the beginning, because I know that right now for Pete, I'm paying, and he's just a little over a year of age, about $350 a year. And yes, I'm a veterinarian and I have pet insurance because I don't do surgery. And if something came up that he required to have something done, I would need to, you know, go to one of my colleagues and pay the price that anybody else does.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, so that's a lot of money for a dog, $2,500 to $3,000 a year. Cats
are going to be less than that, obviously. I mean, it ends up being probably about 20% less than that, but it's
still expensive.
Still expensive.
I have two cats. I know all about it.
Right.
Well, another topic I guess we don't always like to talk about so much, but that's euthanasia, putting your kitty or your pet to sleep.
Yeah.
What are the most important things to know?
Well, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is that on the last couple of shows, I've brought up the fact that I adopted this dog. His name he came with was Meatball, but we called him Lumpy. He was a bulldog of undetermined age. And a couple of weeks ago, right before we were going to be taking him to Canada on vacation, I had made a promise to him that I would never let him suffer. And he had a large mass on his chest wall called a chondrosarcoma, which wasn't bothering him and on initial evaluation hadn't spread anywhere else. And so we just said, let's give him a home for as long as we can. And that morning, 2 days before we were about to leave, he just got up and little subtle things like didn't want to eat right away, jumped up on the couch and just sat and closed his eyes. And then you start, I'm watching and I'm seeing him having a little bit of trouble breathing. And I made the call that it had to be that day, that there was no way he'd be able to make it to Canada. And the, you know, even as a veterinarian, knowing that I, you know, I'm watching him, I can say, yes, he's having a little bit of respiratory difficulty. There was still that question of, did I do it too soon? And I think things that you, or pet owners need to, you know, think about is, you know, to help with closure, having an autopsy done or a necropsy is what we call them. And I did have that done with him and he had a liter of fluid in his chest and he had fluid in his abdomen. And so it was just a matter of, you know, days before he really would have been suffering. And so I feel that it helped give me closure. And so just something like that to be thinking about if you ever do lose a pet. But other things that, you know, you need to be considering too, and it's always a good idea to be thinking about this before you actually get to that point, kind of have a plan. Whether you want to have it done at home or in the clinic, we are really lucky in our state. We've got a lot of veterinarians that do in-home euthanasias and hospice care as well. You need to think about who you want to have there with you. Should your kids be present? And there isn't a right or a wrong answer for any of this, you know. And then things also like what you'd like to do with his the remains of the pet, too. Obviously, depending on where you live, burial may not be an option, especially if you're in a city that's against ordinance. But cremation, private versus group, all these things are things to consider, and I think we'll probably be talking more throughout the show on this.
Yeah, that would be my guess. And lots of callers online, by the way. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest. You can join in with Facebook questions and photos. We love to see photos. We also have, of course, email, talk@WPR.org. You can post your questions there as well. Mary in Menominee has a comment. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. We lost our dog, Angel, 3 weeks ago. We let her pass naturally due to the fact that she had, I was a former nurse and a vet tech.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to take care of her in the home and keep her comfortable, but to warn the people that this is every much as taking care of a hospice patient in a person,
mm-hmm.
and that they have to be capable of doing that to make the animal comfortable, mm-hmm. to carry it wherever it needs to be,
right.
to give it the best care that you can give it.
And, you know, so many things come into play, such as things like the size of the animal. If you've got a small dog that you can carry and turn easily and, you know, provide the care it needs right up to the end, that may be okay for many people. But, you know, if you've got a large breed dog and you're trying to get them up and down the stairs or outside, it sometimes becomes an issue that way, too. I'm glad that you were able to have your pet right up into the end, but things to consider are pain control, hygiene, hydration, you know, just keeping them happy. And that can be difficult unless you're capable of giving fluids or able to, you know, get food into them some way. And, you know, I think that if you're not able to do that, it really is more humane to have the animal's life ended rather than letting them go naturally. Because, like you said, it's the hospice care is a full-time job for pets that are in that situation.
And
yeah.
People have to realize there's no turning back once they're in that death process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to make that decision. But she had thyroid disease, and our other dog had the same, and it took 5 shots to her heart. So she didn't want to leave us. So in that case, it was better to mm-hmm. and we were capable of taking care of her, so she had a good passage.
Well, good.
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 Thank you so much for your comments and for calling in today, Mary. I appreciate it very much. I want to give Chris in Wisconsin Dells a chance to join us next. Chris, what's on, hi, what's on your mind?
I would like you to talk about putting together a pet first aid kit and having it in the house. And I have to tell you why. We are moving into the, I have a litter of kittens that are driving me absolutely nuts. So we are moving into the cat flu and cold season. And last winter, I had a cat that got a bad cold. And nobody else had gotten that sick, and so I kind of let it go. Well, this always happens at 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning when you're 50 miles away from the emergency hospital, right? So I'm walking around my house thinking, what can I do for this poor cat? I didn't think she was going to make it through the night. She was posturing and breathing really heavily, and it had gone into her lungs. And I have wasabi. Mm-hmm. It worked. I thought, what do I have to lose? She's going to die one way or another, uh-huh. and it's not toxic. I squirted wasabi into her mouth, and she just spewed. She mm-hmm. spewed for 2 hours. She spewed this stuff out of her lungs and out of her sinuses, and everything worked. She woke up in the morning, and she was fine. So everybody should have a pet first aid kit, and they should put a tube of wasabi in it.
Oh, well, I've never heard of that, and I wonder, you know, how humane that actually is, because, boy, oh, boy, I mean,
That stuff is really potent.
That is very, very potent stuff, and you're lucky you didn't get bit in the process of trying to put something like that in your mouth. It would not be something I would recommend. I'm glad things worked out for your kitty, but, you know, there are commercially available pet first aid kits, but I think some of the things that are really important to kind of have, you know, just for your own pet at home is everybody should have some form of antihistamines at home for bee stings and things. I think that's really important. You know, some vet wrap or that that bandage that sticks to itself, some sterile gauzes, obviously. Sometimes for dogs that are field dogs, we have owners that will purchase through our surgery department used but re-sterilized staple guns for quick closure of small wounds and things like that. I think a muzzle is really important because if your dog is injured or your cat is injured and you need to move them to someplace safe, and either knowing how to put a gauze muzzle on or use a necktie or actually have a commercial one available that you can put on so you can move your pet safely. Those are just a few of the things, but I think it's important to have those kind of things at home. I'm always surprised how, you know, when I tell someone, you know, give your dog antihistamines, they don't have any Benadryl or anything like that at home, which can be really helpful.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it, Chris. Wasabi.
Oh, that's a new one on me.
That's
yes.
a new one on me, but that would certainly get the cat's attention.
I sure would.
Oh, man. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest today from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. I think we already have a photo or two up on our Facebook page. Join the crowd. Add your photo there. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. And Cheyenne Lenz taking the calls today, our on-air producer. Again, I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, taking a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. And lots of callers online at 1-800-642-1234. Starting to Bob in Wauwatosa. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Great program as usual, and sure good to hear this guest again.
Thank you.
We're getting our second dog after losing one recently due to old age.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a puppy about 8 weeks old from a breeder who has raised and trained this particular breed for 30-plus years. Nevertheless, are there some specific important questions that we might forget to ask them?
Yeah.
What's the breed, by the way?
English field cockers.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think number one is, as a new pet owner, you need to know the breed of what you're, you know, that you're dealing with and all their health concerns. Every breed is going to be a little bit different as to what gets evaluated. In the, you know, the case of Cocker Spaniels, the one thing that comes up in my mind is, you know, did they have their eyes checked? And it's called a CERF evaluation. It stands for Canine Eye Registration Foundation. But some breeds, like, let's just say, like Labrador Retrievers, they do some other genetic testing for exercise-induced collapse. They do hip and sometimes knee and elbow radiographs, eye evaluations as well for inherited eye diseases. And so depending on the breed that you're dealing with, those are tests that you need to be, not just the owner saying, we've never seen it, but that they're actually looking for it, so that they, you make sure that you are going to be getting a dog from a healthy background. I also like to, kind of in a nutshell, I think the guarantee that I like to see breeders give to a new pet owner, very simple, and that is lifetime. What do I mean by that? Not necessarily that the breeder is going to be, you know, there, you know, throughout the dog's life paying for everything for you, but that they have taken the time to make sure that they have the healthiest dogs and are producing healthy dogs. And not only that, that they are going to be, the new dogs are going to be going into a home where they're going to be cared for properly. So be prepared for the breeder to, you know, ask you a lot of questions and want to know how you're going to be dealing with the dog. You know, whether you have time to go to dog training classes or, you know, something is, if I was in the puppy business, I would want to make sure that that dog is being, you know, going to training classes and so on. Not that, you know, it's, the owner may be able to do it at home, but it's just so important to get them out and do those kind of things. And, but you also want to be careful to make sure that both mom and dad, if preferably, are present. I'd want to visit with them before I even see the puppies. And, you know, it's, I always think it's a little shady when someone's delivering a dog to you, like at a, you know, a big box parking lot. And believe me, I've had clients do that where they never got to meet mom and dad. And they, you know, just bought the dog kind of sight unseen and handed over in a parking lot. You need to go to the breeder's home and be able to visit with mom and dad. And if they don't let you, run away. Okay. Don't even stop and think about, you know, well, maybe I really want this dog. Find another breeder.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. And, you know, and then what, but the other thing that I mean by lifetime guarantee is a reputable breeder is going to take that dog back if you can't care for it anymore. If something comes up where it's like, well, you know, our life, we can't take care of it, you know, because, you know, we're elderly or there's, you know, we've got health issues, rather than see that dog go to, you know, rescue groups and so on, where funding can be quite, you know, quite low for them, the breeder should take it back to make sure that they made it. They are going to take it back and make sure that it gets into another suitable home or it stays in their home for the rest of the dog's days. So, yeah, do your homework. That's what it comes down to. And, you know, you're looking at a field trained dog. And I don't know if that's something that you're prepared for. Or do, if you want to get into hunting, that may be that they've been selecting for that type of personality to have a dog that's always on the go. And if that's not what you're into, you may want to be looking at getting an English Cocker that may be bred for show or, you know, that type of thing rather than being out in the field.
Yeah. More sedate.
Yeah, more sedate.
Right, right.
Absolutely. So some good things to think about, Bob. And actually, it's a great call. A lot of other people, I'm sure, are going to be helped by that. So thanks again for that call. On our Facebook page, have some kind of cool photos. Here's one from Eric of his pooch.
Oh, it's a dachshund holding its leash in its mouth. It looks like it's sound asleep with its leash. Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice, that nice photo. And I think here's one from Wendy.
Beautiful border collie.
Oh, yes, a gorgeous.
With a bow like, in her hair.
Oh. It looks like she's ready to move at a moment's notice. So thank you for those. And you can join in, too. Send a photo on our Facebook page. I'd love to see your pet as well. Jackie in Duluth, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm curious. I have two dogs, but one is a large breed, and I'm wondering if there's a way outside of course, testing to know the difference between the dog just getting old and crippled up or possibly having Lyme's disease.
Although we do see Lyme disease in dogs, the majority of dogs that get exposed rarely have any clinical signs. And so things that we would be looking at would be not only having a positive test back, and it's not that expensive to do a little Lyme snap test. And I think that would be, you know, be very helpful if it came back negative. Then you can say my dog's probably arthritic for some other reason. But if it comes back positive, it doesn't necessarily mean that your dog's symptoms are due to having Lyme disease. They still could be due to something else. So then it comes down to there are some other tests that can be done that have kind of questionable results, but there's one that's called the multiplex Lyme test that Cornell University does that helps to determine whether this is an acute versus a chronic form of the disease, which would probably be not very responsive to treatment if it's in that chronic form. And, you know, so that's going to be another test on top of just the standard test as well. I'm a little careful with just handing out antibiotics, but if that is something your veterinarian feels comfortable about, if your dog is clinically affected with Lyme, then the response to doxycycline would be something you'd be looking for as well. And although I think that may not be a prudent use of an antibiotic just as a trial, that might be something, again, that you may want to talk to your veterinarian about trying. But doxycycline went way off the scale price-wise, and I don't know where it is right now. I think it's dropped a little bit, so it's a little bit easier to obtain, and it's not going to break the pocketbook, but it still is an expensive antibiotic.
There we go. Thanks, Jackie, for calling. And Mark in Durand, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a quick question. Actually, a two-part question. First one, it's going to sound a little weird. Growing up, I grew up with my dad. He had a large breed dog. It was part Malamute, part wolf. And when he wanted to do the deworming, he never went out and bought, you know, the stuff off the shelf. He would take a bag of Red Man chewing tobacco and stick it in the dog's mouth and then basically have to hold the mouth shut. It always worked. I was just wondering what your thoughts on that was.
Well, I think I would not be recommending it. Definitely there are safer things that are out there that can be more specific for treating various parasites. And I would be really worried about toxicity, because how do you dose the dog appropriately with something like that? And I think the risk of nicotine toxicity is way up there, and I'd be thinking that even though your dad may have had some success, show me the proof. I want to see negative stool checks and so on, not just seeing the parasites in the fecal material, because not all parasites that dogs have are visible grossly in the stool. So the dog may still have been parasitized. Another one of these kind of right up there with the wasabi collar. Yeah.
And my other question is, I drive truck.
Okay.
And I've been wanting to get a dog to take with me. But the problem I have is, like I said, my dad had a Malamute and my mom had a Husky, and I just love those two breeds. And I'm trying to figure out which one I want to get. Any recommendations as far as, and what can you tell me, you know, what are they known for? Are they known for their hips to, you know, as they get a little older to go out? Or?
Oh, definitely. They are a large breed dog. They have their own set of skin issues that they can run into troubles with. Orthopedic disease like hip dysplasia, shoulder and elbow dysplasia definitely can be a problem for them. We can see, cataracts and issues like that. So this is a breed that should have a full orthopedic evaluation and an eye evaluation before being used for breeding. And, you know, really think about if you are going to be crossing state lines with your dog in your truck, are you able to, like, get health certificates, veterinary care on the road? Is the heat going to be a problem for the dog? Just your liability with having a dog while you're, you know, working in a commercial situation like that. Although the dog may be, a comfort to you when you're traveling, they are a lot of work. And I just went to Canada for the first time without taking a dog with me. It was a different vacation. I mean, we could stop and lock the car up and not have to worry. And, it really makes a difference sometimes not having a dog with you. So just, before you do that impulse, I want to go out and do this, do your homework on the breed so you know what questions to ask. Really think about the logistics before you start adding a teammate that's got four legs.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure with being in a truck, I don't know if I want to get a large breed dog since it's so small,
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. It's just going to mean more stops for potty breaks for the dog. And, you're really on the dog time when you're doing that. And unless you're an independent trucker, you're going to have to check with your employer as well.
No, there we go. Thanks, Mark. Good luck with that. Appreciate the call. And if you do get a dog, after about 6 months, call us back and let's see how it worked out. Let's see how it worked out. Thanks, Mark. Oh man, Walter in Verona, your turn. Hi, Walter.
Yes, hi. Hi, Larry. Thanks. A great show. Thanks, Dr. Filippi. I would like to see if you would address the topic of hyperthermia in dogs in particular. Having had a personal experience walking and hiking with three dogs, a Vizsla, a Lab, and then my daughter's pit bull, and having the pit bull almost go into heat stroke on a day that was only 78 degrees.
And this is something you really have to know your dogs. I have English bulldogs, and the last week or so when the temperatures have been so high, they have spent almost all of their time inside in air conditioning just because their anatomical difference facially compared to other dogs makes it more difficult for them to get rid of extra body heat because they can't breathe and pant efficiently. So some of it's going to come down to the dog breed. Some of it's going to depend on not only the temperature, but the humidity as well, and kind of the surface that your dog is walking on, because, if you're walking on hot pavement and so on, that could really be a problem with having their feet are the only spot that can sweat. If they're losing body moisture and so on through that, they can get dehydrated faster. If they're not drinking enough when they're out in the heat, there's all these other variables, and even the weight of the animal can have a difference as well, because if they're slender and athletic, they're going to do a lot better dealing with higher temperatures than the overweight pet that has all that extra insulation that's there. So I'm not sure of those three dogs which one was in the best shape, but my guess is the pit bull probably was maybe carrying a little extra weight, maybe has just maybe a little bit more of a squished face than the lab, with that, probably just all those things added up.
It was the pit bull, and actually he collapsed, and I had to carry him about 400 yards on my shoulders.
Wow, wow.
Oh, boy.
Well, I'm glad you're in good shape to be able to do that. Yeah.
I don't want to repeat that, but I can tell you, you had an earlier guest that said something about a pet first aid kit, and one thing I did not have on hand at home was a rectal thermometer.
Yes.
And that's another thing that I think people need to think about.
Yes, having a dedicated thermometer for your pet and being comfortable with using it as well. And those are things that are really helpful so that you can kind of triage your dog a little bit to know what's going on with them before you even call the vet or the emergency clinic.
There we go. Thanks a lot, Walter. Appreciate it very much.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you. We have some open lines. You can get on at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Carol and Nina next. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. How are you all?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Oh, it's nice to get through. We have a 13-year-old black lab named Corky, and he's been a wonderful addition to our family. But within the past year or so, he has had sporadic issues of pooping inside the house, and it seems as though he almost doesn't either. It comes too quick, and he heads to the door, and he doesn't make it, or he doesn't even kind of know that he's doing it. It could be during the night, and it's very. It could be twice in a day, or it could be not for a month or two. But it has been getting over time more. Happening more often.
Yeah.
And I had talked with the vet, and it sounds like it's just an age-related thing, and there's nothing we can do really without surgery, and they don't recommend that.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you had any other ideas just how to help him, because we feel so bad. I mean, it is
embarrassing. Yeah, it's embarrassing for them to, be having accidents. And it's not uncommon for dogs as they get older to have issues with incontinence. Sometimes that's due to decreased anal tone. Sometimes it's due to spinal cord issues, degenerative changes in the back that could be causing them to not have the sensory capabilities to know that they have stool that's there ready to come out. Sometimes it's even cognitive decline. We do see senility issues, and pets will lose sometimes their learned behaviors, such as housebreaking, as they get older as well. And there are some treatments available for cognitive decline, medical management, and that might be something to talk to your veterinarian about. But if your dog is showing some, limb weakness, and this would be something your veterinarian could assess by looking for evidence of back pain or neurologic deficits to the back end. They're a little more difficult to treat. And if it's something as simple as your dog has arthritis and is just wanting to lay there and not get up until the very last minute and then can't make it to the door, sometimes dealing with the pain may be helpful for these older dogs as well. If they've got bad hips or a sore back, having them on chronic pain medication sometimes allows them to be a little more mobile so they can get to the door a little bit faster and get outside and not be surprised. So not a whole lot I can do to help you without knowing exactly what's causing this, but I think a good physical exam, good neurologic exam, and then, talking to your veterinarian about pain control would be things that would be very helpful for your dog.
And there you go. Thank you so much, Carol, for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Tony in Mount Horeb up next. Hi, Tony.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call, folks. Mm-hmm. Currently have a 12-year-old male who's, we got him as a stray, and he's his is other cats, but we have acclimated him to one new cat in the past, and we're looking to adopt another cat and looking for recommendation regarding sex and age of the second cat. Our vet has suggested a young adult male.
Mm-hmm. There was one study that was done several years ago, and I think it was out of Georgia, where they were looking at two cat households and how well the different sex combinations got along. And what they found is that the male, especially neutered males, tended to bond and be kind of closer, play together more, spend more time sleeping together and enjoy each other's company. Male-female, it was kind of a crapshoot as to how they got along. And female-females, they tended to tolerate each other and not, spend a lot of time, like, cuddled. Now, this is just, people are going to call and say, but I have two females and they get along fine. But this was just looking at these two cat households and kind of what they to help us with maybe predicting what would be a better addition to your home. Anytime you're going to be bringing another cat in, number one, you want to do it slowly and gradually. I would be bringing the new cat in after he's been checked by your veterinarian for intestinal parasites, ear mites, fleas, lice, other infectious diseases like feline leukemia and FIV, making sure that they don't have any upper respiratory problems, that they're vaccinated. And then when you do bring them in, have them behind a closed door so that the two cats get used to each other with a door separating them, so that they, you know, can kind of get used to the smells and the sounds of having another cat around. Think about, you know, your needs as well, and whether you're going to be able to meet a two-cat household needs. And that means having three litter boxes, a litter box for every cat plus one. Are you able to do that? Can you provide for another cat by, you know, having them in three different locations? And you also need to be thinking about how you're feeding your cat. A 12-year-old cat may not be eating the same food as a young cat would be. And are you able to separate them for mealtime? And if your 12-year-old cat is being free-fed, that might be something you're going to have to take the time to get your cat comfortable with just eating a couple of meals, two, three meals a day, so that you can then bring the new cat in and be able to feed them separately so that you can meet their nutritional needs as well. So there's lots to think about, but you know, the introduction period can be anywhere from a couple of days to sometimes weeks to sometimes even months. And there are some people that live in a house divided. They just can't get the cats to get along with each other. So if you're prepared for that potential problem, then by all means, go out and get another cat. And there's lots of cats out there that need
lots
homes.
Lots of cats. And we have two males at home, and they're just, they love each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Tiger's life is so much better since we added Coco a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, yep, just much better life.
Right, right.
Just a male, sounds like Dr. Sawchuk.
Well, we thanks a lot for calling. It's a great question, and appreciate your call, Tony. And lots more callers online. We had a Facebook question from Allie, who said, I have a 7-year-old golden retriever. Just gave him a bath Saturday, and on Saturday night, I noticed that his ear flap itself is about a half to an inch thick and filled with fluid.
Ooh.
Is this something I should be alarmed about?
Yeah. Well, my guess is that after bathing, the dog probably shook its head crazy, you know, like crazy trying to get dried off, and ruptured blood vessels in the ear and developed what's called an ear or an aural, as in ear, A-U-R-A-L, aural hematoma. And this is something that if you don't do anything about it, it eventually will resolve on its own. But as a result of that, as that blood clot just starts to get taken back up by the body, the cartilage of the ear is going to become deformed. And depending on where this accumulation is, if it's closer to the ear canal, that could actually be more problematic for the dog if you've got kind of a crumpled ear. And it can be cosmetic. If it's towards like the distal part of the ear tip, then if it's a little crinkled and you don't care, then by all means, let it go. But most people will take them into the vet and have it drained. And usually we're looking at some surgery, putting some sutures in to get everything to heal back down in place again. And also looking to see if there's some other reason why the dog was shaking its head, like an ear infection or allergic skin disease or something that could have triggered this.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Always great to have her along. And again, thank you for listening. Join in a photo, send it to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post your question there as well. You can also call us at 800-642-1234. And speaking of Facebook, we got a really cute Facebook photo from Jackie, who said, this is my mini. And
oh my goodness, this dog has pajamas on and slippers or socks on, and it is as cute as can be. Now, if I tried to do that with one of my dogs, they wouldn't move. They would just sit there and be so embarrassed, but some dogs do like getting dressed up.
And Jackie says Minnie suffers from environmental and food allergies. The booties help to keep her from scratching and chewing her paws and body. I also use a cone regularly.
There you go. Just mechanically keeping the dog comfortable. But, you know, one of the things that, the owner could do is if the dog does have environmental allergies, it's just something as simple as damp mopping the dog when they come in from outside so that you're getting rid of all those allergens on the feet and the hair coat. So, you know, keeping diaper wipes or baby wipes by the back door and just, you know, mop the dog right down. And sometimes that helps.
Mike in Green Bay has a question for you. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Question I have is I have a dog, a rat terrier, and a cat, and my dog, it will not eat its dog food. It's always eating the cat's food, and we tried switching dog foods on him, and nothing helps.
Yeah, you know, he's got a taste of that high protein, higher fat cat food. And, you know, cat food, the reverse would not be true. You can't feed dog food to cats because it doesn't have enough taurine in it. But, you know, a dog could potentially survive on cat food, but it's expensive because of it. It is higher in protein, higher in fat than dog food is. I'm not sure how you're going about introducing the food, but if the dog has access to cat food, then he's probably holding out and saying, why should I eat the dog food when I have the cat food around? So make sure that food is up and out of the way. And I would be looking at just very gradually. You may have to take a little bit of the cat food that the dog's eating and then add in kibble or whatever you're going to be using and just do a very gradual changeover. I think that's going to be healthier for your dog in the long run. But when you've got a dog that becomes fussy, it can be a hard, difficult thing to break. So, but, you know, if a dog goes for a day or two without eating because, you know, you're just doing that tough love, that's usually not a problem for them unless they've got some other health condition like they're diabetic or they have something where they have to eat. I would just, you know, practice tough love a little bit.
Okay, there we go. Thanks, Mike. John in New Lisbon. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. So I have a 10-year-old husky.
Okay.
I was wondering what the average lifespan of a Siberian husky is.
Yeah.
With him getting older, you kind of worry. Last 2 years, he's had two seizures, about a year apart, but my vet told me that that's common in husky breeds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So just, you know, kind of preparing if this starts happening more and, you know,
yeah.
He starts slowing down and stuff, you know. But what is my expectancy of, you know, he's a good, healthy dog.
Yeah, and that's, you know, if you're keeping your dog slender, you know, it's getting lots of exercise, mental stimulation, and so on. Large breed dogs, we see them like 10 to 12 is what most books are going to say. But, boy, we see them coming in at sometimes 14, 15 years of age as well. One of the best things you could do is go back to the breeder that you got your dog from and just say, hey, how long did, you know, my dog's grandparents live and what did they die of? Just so that you have a better idea, because sometimes that it is very familial as to how long a pet's going to live. So my old bulldog, Bulldozer, when he hit 10, I was like, oh, that's like up there for a bulldog. And I ended up contacting the stud's owner, like the stud who lived in actually another state, and just said, you know, what did a Dozer's father die of? Because I see he died at 9 years of age. And it turned out that he ended up dying because he bit the cord and through of the refrigerator and electrocuted himself. It was not a health problem. And so it kind of gave me that sense of security that, good, you know, I don't have to be, you know, waiting for cancer or something horrible to happen. Turned out he did die of cancer. But sometimes just having that background knowledge of what the parents succumbed to would be helpful for you to know what to be watching for.
There we
okay,
go. Thanks, Sean. Pat in Madison. Hi.
Hi. My question is about my son's dog in Iowa. It's an American Staffire Bull Terrier, but to me it looks like a big pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
He's 5 years old. They got him from a rescue a year ago. He has three kids, and I heard about this when he got the dog, and I thought he was absolutely crazy to do this. But since that time, the dog has been nothing but a nice, pleasant, friendly dog to everyone. There's not been any incident where he's been aggressive or growling or anything of that nature. And I'm just wondering, is it time I can stop worrying about whether the dog's going to go ballistic someday?
I think that this, pit bulls have been given such a bad rap. And I have been quoted at saying that I would take a pit bull over a chihuahua any day, mm-hmm. just because I see more aggressive small breed dogs than I do with the large breed dogs. And if this dog has a stable temperament, gets along fine with everybody, has an enriched life. I mean, I think this is your worry and not your son's worry. I think sounds like you're concerned that you're giving the your son's dog like the stereotypical, breed, thing that you see in the news. But for the majority, a great majority of pit bulls, it all depends on how they're raised. If they're raised in a trusting, loving home and they're well socialized, this is true for any dog, they can become really good family members. So stop worrying. It sounds like we've had a great year. This dog sounds like he's got a wonderful life. And I think he needs to have a grandpa that trusts him. So
there you go.
Okay, my son said it was the best $40 he's ever spent. So.
Yeah, good.
There you go. Thanks, Pat. And enjoy that dog and enjoy your grandkids. Fred in Green Bay. Hello, thanks for calling.
Thank you for calling. I have a 10-year-old Labrador guide dog that I'm going to have to retire because he has a sarcoma in his left front foot.
Oh.
And I'm wondering what I can anticipate. I know it's not going to metastasize, but what can I anticipate in terms of the rest of his life?
Well, there's all kinds of different types of sarcomas, and some of them do spread. Often they tend to be more like an octopus sending out tentacles of malignant tissue. So I would be hoping that your veterinarian is tried to find out what kind of sarcoma it is. We see hemangiosarcomas in the skin, which are tumors of blood vessels that do spread more quickly just because they're vascular. We can see, some very low-grade sarcomas that, surgery can be curative. On the foot, maybe a little bit of a problem just getting wide margins depending on where it is. Again, I think you need to find out exactly what kind of sarcoma it is, because that is like a huge a huge area of cancer that can affect the body.
Well, he's already had surgery on the sarcoma to remove the tumor,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it is growing back.
Okay. Yeah, and another thing to be thinking...
It was considered to be a low-grade sarcoma.
Okay,
at
yeah.
that point.
And, if they can go back in and get wider margins, that may be very helpful. And it may be able to buy your dog a long time if it's a low-grade sarcoma. So, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you, Fred, for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Stella in Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I'm calling in. You've had a number of calls about feeding multiple pets in a household.
Yeah.
We adopted two kitties from the Humane Society, and the Humane Society microchipped them. And we were having the situation of one is a chow hound and the other is a picky eater.
Mm-hmm.
And we found on Amazon, a pet feeder. It's a microchip pet feeder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're imported from England. The brand is called SureFlap,
mm-hmm.
and SureFeed microchip pet feeder is what it is. And what we did was we programmed one feeder per cat.
Yeah.
And so each kitty can open their own feeder, but they can't open the other ones.
Great idea. Yeah.
And they have this lid that comes down over it, and
mm-hmm.
you know, You can hear them open up. You can hear when they go and eat.
Yeah, very cool.
It's just, they were pricey, and we hesitated on that count, and it's just been a godsend.
Yeah,
I don't have to think about it at all.
Yeah, there's another company that's making something similar to that, and it's called the Meow Space, and it either reads a microchip or it has a little magnetic key that the animal wears on its collar. But people have designed their own just using the like the little dog or cat doors that have the same technology and have a either a dedicated room or a spot that this door is installed so that only one cat can get in and the other one can't. So that's, very cool. I'll have to look at those bowls. I've seen the other things, but not the actual bowls.
I haven't seen that one either. Thanks a lot, Stella, for calling. Appreciate it very much. So that would work well. Although, I tell you what, Frosty, or Tiger and Coco has these special food that, but Tiger will just watch him eat that food.
Yeah.
He will not touch the food, that food. So
well, good. You're lucky.
Because,
therapeutic diets. And he probably would be fine on that particular therapeutic diet, but there are some therapeutic diets that are inappropriate to feed certain ages or cats with certain health problems. So I'm glad things have worked out.
Yeah, things have worked out really well. And we have more callers here and friends. A caller from our Janie wondered about a dog has a collapsed trachea. He gets coughing and choking spells. What could you expect for his future health? He's 13 now.
Yeah, and as dogs get older, if they've got any weight gain, that's going to cause that trachea to collapse even more. Or if they have heart disease, where the heart is bigger and it's pushing up on the trachea, sometimes we need to treat the heart disease to be able to keep the airway going. So that's the big thing: is using a harness, keeping them slender, and keeping other health problems that may aggravate the trachea under control, and that would be like something like heart disease.
Yeah, so a little bit to consider there, and thanks a lot for that question. We've got many more questions and many more comments here. You can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org, or you can go to our Facebook page, and we have several photos on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Go there, and if you don't want to post a photo, go there to look at the photos. They're really cool. That's at the Larry Mueller Show. And call 1-800-642-1234. Back after the news. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here again. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk of the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. She comes by once a month, and we really have fun. Sandy, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
We have many callers, as always. We have Facebook questions galore and Facebook photos galore as well. Let's see. What am I just going to mention a couple here?
There's a wonderful picture of a big Great Dane and his best buddy. It looks like a little Yorkie or Silky Terrier laying together. What? Mutt and Jeff, definitely.
Yeah. That's Doc and Harley.
Yeah.
And here's Brandon sent one of his bloodhound Dookie.
Yeah, what a beautiful dog. And he's not drooling in the picture. That's amazing. Yeah.
That's good. And Karen sent one of her Shelby Beagle mix pup.
Oh, what a cute little dog. Yeah.
Adopted from a rescue when she was two. She's 2 months old. She's 5 months old now.
Aww.
Love her dearly.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a puppy in 14 years. My only advice is to consider your current patience and energy levels.
Definitely. And I think that is, getting a puppy, if you are not able to, I had an owner that ended up with a Labrador Retriever. She wanted to have it as a therapy dog, and the dog ended up having congenital eye problems and was blind by the time it was 16 weeks of age. And the woman had her own health issues, and the dog has, could not get to training classes and things as readily as it should have, but doing fine now. I mean, she did make work really hard at it, but things change. I mean, her health and the dog's health, those are always things to consider whenever you're adopting a new pet.
Well, and Tamara brought that up on a Facebook comment. She said even the best plans and intentions can be impacted by some unexpected life change. Maybe you lose your job or whatever, and, mm-hmm. and your economic circumstances take a nosedive. What do you do in that case if you're a pet owner?
Yeah, you know, hopefully you've got family members that may be able to step in and either adopt your pet for you so that it can continue on in the family. That's why so many pets end up in rescue or at shelters for simple reasons like that, that, you know, you've had a lifestyle change. But those are always things to be considering when you're adding a pet to your life. Am I going to be experiencing any major changes, you know, in the lifetime of this pet, and what am I going to do about it? And it's, you know, sometimes it's a surprise, and other times it's things that, you know, you're going to be anticipating.
Karen sent us a nice photo of she talks about her sweet yellow lab Maddie in July. They lost, were greatly helped by Journey's Home Pet Euthanasia, which also has a wonderful questionnaire to help pet owners know how to decide when the time is right. It helped us to see that the time for Maddie was right. Thanks to information from Dr. Sandy, I've posted a photo of Zoe, our new rescue dog, who is 5.5 years old and really sweet.
She looks like a cute little beagle mix. And yes, the Journey's Home Pet Euthanasia is one of our local businesses here. A very wonderful group of compassionate veterinarians. And on their website, they have this thing that they actually call Journeys, which is taken from human hospice care. Each letter stands for you know, a different type of quality of life thing that can affect your pet. And it's, you know, looking at everything from happiness, mobility, appetite, hydration, pain control, all these things. And it's really helpful to just sit down and go through that because sometimes we focus on certain things like, well, they're still eating, but just because they're eating, are they still having really good quality of life? And and so it's helpful to have that kind of information and just kind of look at things a little more objectively.
We had an email question from Nick, who's been trying to help a friend with flea problems, picked up at a daycare, unfortunately, on two dogs, each dog roughly 50 pounds, one with short hair, and one is a border collie mixed with longer hair. Any advice, since they seem to be a great deal of conflicting advice about how to deal with it, from veterinarians.
Yeah, I mean, hair coat length probably doesn't make any difference at all. Remember, the fleas that you're seeing on your pet actually came from eggs that were laid anywhere from like 30 to 60 days ago. And so whether they got them at daycare or whether it was just luck of the draw that you had a raccoon or a possum come through your yard and deposit some eggs in a nice protected area like under your deck or under some bushes, and they hatched and jumped up on your dog and then started the breeding process. And remember, once fleas are on, they will start laying eggs very quickly, and nothing holds the eggs on the pet. They roll off, and so a flea infested pet is like a big salt shaker depositing eggs everywhere they go. Probably your best bet is to go with one of the monthly either oral products or topical products that are very good at killing adult fleas, and you really have to treat for to be able to get rid of all the eggs in the environment for at least 3 consecutive months, if not longer. Vacuuming is going to help, especially in areas where the pets sleeps, baseboards, tile floors, hardwood floors, carpeted areas, you know, get all of those areas vacuumed up really well. And then be on the lookout for outdoor sources of fleas, such as, you know, raccoons and possums. Those tend to be the two big transmitters of fleas.
Here is Michael from Middleton with a question for us. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hey, thanks for taking my call. And I have a pair of they're adopted feral kittens, which we got from the Dane County, you know, feral, the feral cats of mm-hmm. Dane County. They're great. Give them a shout out to them. And the male, it's a male and a female, and the male has, according to the vet, like food allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, my wife is also convinced that he's like getting bigger. And the food's prescription, are there, you know, like food allergy, like light?
Ooh, that's
cow stuff.
Yeah,
I've looked. I looked on the websites. I didn't see anything.
Nah. What you're feeding your cat is probably a hydrolyzed protein diet. And, you know, you have to feed according to the cat's metabolic needs. Okay. And so it may come down to meal feeding your cat a measured amount of food to meet their energy needs. And that is going to be, your veterinarian can help you with, you know, looking at your cat's body condition and then being able to translate that into how many calories a day your cat needs, and then translate that into how much food to actually feed your cat. To my knowledge, there are no light or low calorie hydrolyzed protein diets available for cats with food allergies. So I think it's just going to be more kind of tough love and a little more work from your point, you know, from your point of view, and that you're going to have to meal feed the kitty and just get the measured amount in.
That's what I'm getting from my wife. And so basically he's eating rabbit.
Okay. Yeah.
But he's never been allergy tested. And then I guess my other question, this is completely out of the whack. So they're supposedly a brother and sister. They're not quite 3 years old. They're both fixed. Is there at some point the mounting behavior between the male and female, does that stop?
No, because that, I mean, they just, it's can be play, it can be control.
Yeah.
So it will likely continue, and that's doesn't have anything to do with sex. It's, they're already spayed and neutered, so it's probably one of the other things that I mentioned, such as play or control. When it comes to food allergies, there really isn't any good blood test that you can do to diagnose them. What it is going through an elimination diet trial to have the cat for, usually we're looking at 8 to 12 weeks of a restricted diet, either hydrolyzed protein or one of the limited ingredient diets like the rabbit and green pea, that type of thing. You have to be really careful. The diets that are available over the counter at pet stores that say limited ingredient or limited antigen diets are not made in a plant that totally clears out and allows, it gets rid of any other proteins or allergen sources that are there from manufacturing other types of food. I kind of equate it to us with peanut allergies. If you have a peanut allergy, you have to be very careful and look at packaging to say, this product is made in a plant that handles peanuts. They may not intentionally put peanuts in there, but there still could be enough contamination that could trigger an allergic response. And so that's why these therapeutic diets are more expensive, is because they are more difficult to make, and they have to be made as kind of single batches or in a dedicated manufacturing plant where only that is made in that plant. So it's unfortunate. But if you haven't done it for a good 2 to 3 months to determine whether your cat has an allergy, food allergy, that's what you need to do.
Keep going. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. We had an email question from Julie, who said, last night my cat was disoriented and confused. He then just laid down and was quite unresponsive for a while. This morning he was able to navigate around outside, but is still disoriented, seems lost, and freaks out when wanting to move forward. He looks back over his shoulder quite a bit.
Wow, it sounds like something's happened neurologically, and I worry that either the cat had a vascular accident or maybe an infectious disease affecting the nervous system. There are some things like a vestibular disease that can affect cats as well that can come on very acutely. This cat really needs to be seen by a veterinarian, and I would not be allowing a cat that is neurologically impaired to be outside because they're not going to be able to defend themselves. So get that cat in the house and call your veterinarian. Yeah.
Ron in Michigan, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 5-year-old black lab, and the nearest I can tell, she was chewing on a Nyla bone, which she liked to do one night, and the next morning she would yelp if she tried to take anything with the front of her mouth, and she wouldn't play with her Kong or play with her toys or anything any longer. I took her to the vet, and she couldn't find anything wrong, and put her on amoxicillin in case there was something going on. And after a week, that didn't help, so I took her to another vet, and he put her on Remedil for a week, still couldn't find anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
After she started on Remedil, she seemed to be fine, and Now it's 2 weeks later, and she's eating normally, but I'm afraid to give her Nylabones anymore.
Yeah, the big...
So I'm wondering, are they really safe to give? But more importantly, do you think somehow she could have damaged a tooth that we don't know? Neither person took x-rays, and
yeah.
I don't know if they would have shown that.
Yeah, Nylabones are hard enough that especially dogs that are over 30, 35 pounds, they have enough jaw strength to fracture teeth with those. The Nylabone company does make some other safer toys that are designed for puppies. They're a flexible nylon bone, and those can be safer. But anything that's hard, like natural bones, that those nylon toys, our dental department says that if it hurts, if you hit yourself with it, don't put it in the dog's mouth. And sometimes we do see things that are not tooth-related, like temporomandibular joint disease that could have been aggravated. There still could potentially be a fractured tooth there, especially things like slab fractures, maybe where the tooth just breaks off a chunk off the side, and it may still be hanging there, but every time the dog tries to bite into something, it may wiggle and bother the dog. So I think that it would be, if your dog is better, great, but if they're, start to show discomfort again, then obviously getting a good oral exam done under general anesthesia so that radiographs can be taken would be, I think, the next step for your dog. But yeah, throw that Nylabone out. Not an appropriate toy for a big dog.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Kathy in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I am a cat care volunteer at a humane society, and we have a cat that had been in a bay doing fine and went into the med room into a cage because of some illness, and I don't know exactly what it was. She is now back in a bay, and now she's starting to pull her hair out. So she's got spots all over where she's actually pulled her hair out.
I
don't know, is it anxiety? And she will not, she's back in the bay, but she will not involve herself with the other cats. There's about, 13 in the bay or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be very social. She's not anymore.
I get really worried when we see cats that are barbering their hair coat. We used to think years ago, and we'd call it psychogenic alopecia, meaning that it was a stress-related, like a person biting their fingernails to the quick.
Yeah.
But the fact that this cat is in a shelter situation, we get really worried about other contagious things that can cause a cat to be really itchy. And it's a process of elimination to kind of rule things out. Probably one of the things that we're seeing a little more frequently, or at least diagnosing a little more frequently, is a mite called Demodex that is a cat-specific Demodex that's very different than dog Demodex. It's contagious versus the one in dogs, it isn't. And that would be something that doing some skin scrapings and hair pluckings to have a look would be warranted. And I'd also check a stool sample, because sometimes they're grooming the mites off of themselves and we'll find them in a fecal flotation. So going down that path, I think, would be a good idea. Making sure the kitty doesn't have ringworm, which is a fungal infection that can make them itchy as well. That can present like this by
That's
getting...
what I thought initially, but...
Yeah.
But
the only way you can tell is by doing a culture. And many shelters are now routinely culturing new cats that are coming in to make sure that they're not, going home into adopted homes with some type of a ringworm infection. But that needs to get done as well. It could definitely be allergies to something, too. And so we see cats with seasonal allergies and food allergies that can present with the same kind of barbering of their hair. And so it's, like I said, skin scrapings, fecal, fungal culture, diet trials, those would be all things that need to get looked into. But right now, this cat probably shouldn't be adopted until you get to the bottom of it.
Should the cat be out of the bay again?
It's very possible, if this is something contagious, that some of the other cats may be either coming down with it, or if you look carefully, maybe some of them have the same issue, but maybe not to the same degree. I would keep the kitty isolated until you find out what's causing this.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, what do you do for ringworm?
What do I do for ringworm?
So, yeah, what would you do, you know, if we get, because we've had some outbreaks and then we get better and
mm-hmm. so forth. Yeah, typically recommend using lime sulfur dip, and it's a solution that kind of has a smelly, sulfury, very, you know, stinky, yep. but yep. using lime sulfur dips is typically the treatment of choice.
Okay, yep. okay. Yeah. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And that is smelly, but it's effective too. So.
It is. Well, you went home with a kitty that had gone through treatment, and they can still smell sometimes for weeks to months afterwards.
Weeks yep. and weeks. Terry in Williams Bay. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I love dogs and would like to adopt a dog, but I wonder if I really should or not. I'm 76. I live alone. I travel seasonally across the country, and that's why I want to know yes or no. But also, should I use a local shelter or a rescue group? And what's sort of a best breed to look into? I haven't had a dog for about 20 years.
You know, that's like asking me, you know, who should I pick as my husband? Okay. You know, you're 76, but you could be a very young, athletic 76, and you may want a dog that wants to be your walking partner, and, you know, getting out every day. You may, if you're, you know, a more sedentary lifestyle, then you're probably going to be wanting a dog that's going to be, you know, hang around and be comfortable laying on the couch next to you and may not need as much exercise. Obviously, younger dogs are going to need more training and socialization, which is going to be more work for you. An older dog, you know, may come with its own set of problems, but those are things that usually the shelter is able to, you know, assess before they're put up for adoption and be able to help you with making a choice. Those are all good things that you personally need to be looking at to say, you know, am I ready to take this on? And, you know, it's interesting. There's down at Texas A&M, they actually have a extended care boarding or shelter type service for people that can, you know, donate enough money for their dog after someone has passed away. The dog can go there and live. Students actually live in the house, and they, you know, have, I don't know how many pets that are there right now, but they have a very good quality of life, and they're, you know, they may, if you've got enough money, that your dog may be able to retire in Texas. But yeah, so really think about it first before you get it. Obviously, the expense is just part of it. That a lot of it's going to depend on you and what your needs are as well. So I wish I could answer your question for you, but don't be afraid. If you want a dog, go out and get a dog and enjoy it for, and you know, we know that pets keep us healthier and happier. And this may be the thing that you need at this point in your life.
Yep. So good luck, Terry. And thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to mention that, we've got some more photos up on our Facebook page. Dean sent us a photo of
St. Bernard puppy.
Stella, the St. Bernard puppy.
She's going to be big. We should get another picture of her in the next 6 months just to
send another one, Dean. And then Jean sent us one of Bud Dog is still going strong after a bone cancer diagnosis and an amputation.
Yeah, it's the three. I like to tell people that all dogs have three legs. The fourth is a spare.
Whoops! Where did I go? I went. Yeah. I lost that. Darn it! I wish I had not. There were some more posts. Let me see what else we got here. I think we've got.
But
I
you know,
time.
That picture of the dog with three legs is so heartwarming. I think people think that, you know, it's going to be such a problem for their dog, but they just don't go through the emotional stress that we would in a case like that. And most of them just bounce right back. The pain's gone, and they can be happy for the rest of their life.
And Wendy sent pictures of Cindy and Galaxy last winter. Photos having a good time.
Playing in the snow.
Oh, great shots. Yeah. And then that's it. Yeah. And here we are out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
My goodness me.
Lots of different questions today. It was quite nice. So,
it was really a lot of fun. And just tomorrow we'll be talking about aquatic invasives for part of the show. And then we're going to get an update on avian bird flu. So that's coming up. In the meantime, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest, thanks so much to her. from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. And thanks to you for listening. And please stay with us. There's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.